You're listening to Splainin on Radioactive International.
This is DJ Bambina with you on this Friday evening. I have taken a couple of weeks off due to craziness, house renovations, and moving preparations, and you know how it is. But we are back. Actually, this conversation that I'm about to play for you happened, I think, 3 weeks ago. And the editing process has been kind of a bitch, but it's done, and I'm so happy that my friend Kathy was able to sit down with me, and we talked about the very uplifting topic of death and grief. So I guess I should probably put a trigger warning on this. We talk about death and grief, so if that's not a topic that you can hang with, I totally understand. But we just talk a little bit about our experiences. It's nothing heart-wrenching, so don't get all upset in advance. But it's the real talk about experiencing loss. So I'm pleased that we were able to have it, and I think it's something that people don't talk about enough. So here it is. This is myself and my friend Kathy talking about loss. Is this a death talk?
We're going to talk about grief and death, I think. So we've both experienced death in quite a number of ways. And it's one of those big things, I think, that really changes you and changes your outlook and changes your attitudes and perspectives. Not necessarily like completely or anything, but enough in that you're not the same person you were before that awful, disgusting thing happened.
I think of it as almost like a secret club or something, because I've known plenty of people who had lost parents or siblings or what have you, and I was just kind of like, oh yeah, that sucks. And then once it happened to me, I realized, oh no, that's all they're thinking about all the time. And like, you realize that they've just been passing as regular people.
Yeah.
But there's like definitely, there's people who have lost those close to them, and people who haven't. People who haven't have no fucking idea.
You know, shortly after my godfather died, my grandmother died, and she'd been, you know, like this real hardy country woman, you know. She'd lost a leg when she was young, and she'd still be like, up and down. She, like, her clothesline was like, I don't know, about like 6 meters up the back of the house through fields, and you know, she'd just been this real strong lady, like, and I was like very sad when she died. And I remember all of this death sort of happening around the same time, and you'd sort of wonder, like, you'd have these morbid little daydreams about, oh my god, what would it be like if my mom died? And you would sort of imagine hearing about it, and you'd imagine your response, and you'd imagine, you know, like these, like a few little things about it, but then you'd stop imagining because she was grand, and you never had to imagine the reality of life without her. Because the reality was, you know, she's there. So, you know, it is all very speculative. Or, you know, you might see like a sad movie and be like, oh my god, I can't imagine what life would. And then you kind of allow your mind to wander for a little bit, and then very quickly you pull it back, because why pretend someone's dead if they're not? Or whatever.
I thought about it so much because my father was 43 when I was born, and so my mother, who was only 19, that's a story for another day, but, you know, she, the whole time I was growing up, she was like, your father's, you know, he's old, and kind of always trying to hammer home, like, he's old and he's not going to live as long as me, and, you know, whatever, whatever. So I always obsessed about my father dying, you know, and what that would be like. But at the same time, yeah, you think about it for a second, and you're like, well, that's gonna suck.
Yeah.
But it actually, when you lose somebody who's that close to you, it's actually so much worse than you even imagine. Like, you imagine, like, oh, that's gonna be the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And it's even worse, and it's weird, because it's worse in ways that you don't even know is coming. No. Like, I can't imagine your situation, to be honest, because I do think that losing a sibling is got to be at least 10 times worse.
I don't know, you know, I don't know the hierarchy of grief, what it is, you know, I don't know, like, I think it depends, like, so it was just myself and my brother growing up, and we were, you know, my parents had separated, so it was myself, my mother, and my brother, and she had to work to support us, to support the family, like, so a lot of the time it was myself and himself in the house, like, obviously as we got older we developed our own interests, but to be honest, up until I went to college, we hung out all the time, like, my friends had younger siblings who my brother was friends with, and we'd all sort of be in the same general area, being cool and into metal or whatever, you know, like watching the lads skateboard, and you know, like, you know, in the house there was this kind of almost maternal thing where I'd be like, right now, you know, it's time for dinner, or like, you know, help me do the dishes, or and obviously I'm generalizing because I'm not a mother and I don't actually know what it's like to have a maternal relationship with anyone, but it's such a huge part of my life, and losing him was it was just like the closest thing I suppose I can describe it to is like whenever you're in a relationship with someone and you sort of have this future mapped out for yourself, and then that relationship ends and you're sort of mourning the end of the relationship, but also this loss of a, you know, potential future that you had together. But with your sibling, you never expect, like, it's not a relationship in a romantic sense. It's just someone who's going to grow old with you, and, you know.
You don't question it for a second.
No. And because he was my little brother, it was always like, we'll grow old and then I'll die. And, you know, just trying to look at your own future without this lead character in it, or...
I mean, I don't know what your religious beliefs are, mm-hmm. but do you feel like he's there? Because I feel like it's really hard because I'm atheist. I don't even believe in heaven or any afterlife. Yeah. However, like, I just feel it's changed the way I kind of go about my day-to-day business, where I feel like I've got someone there all the time.
Yeah, I remember, and this must have only been like a week or so after he died, where I just sat for ages until I'd worked out something that I was like, yes, that might be a loophole in my atheistness. With, I was like, alternate realities, holy shit, he's dead in this universe, but not in, I can't count the number, because you can't count the number of, you know, possible other universes out there. So every now and again, I just sit down and imagine what Barry in a universe 3, like, he's king of the whole world in a universe. I often find myself asking, you know, well, what would Barry do in this situation? And it can be very, I remember, like, you know, that around the whole funeral, things are complicated, you know, when your parents are divorced and they don't get on especially well, and something like this happens and it forces them into sort of close proximity. It's, you know, it's a shit situation anyway, obviously, and it's just complicated further. I just remember, like, you know, having to try and be kind to my mother and having to try and be kind to my father, and all the time being like, what would Barry do if he were here and I were dead? I was like, he would fuck off is what he would do. He would take off and come back in a month's time, maybe. And that would be that. And nobody would be like, oh, you're an asshole for doing that. In the way that I felt like that there was no avenue for me to be like, I'm out of here.
I went to a retreat. Thich Nhat Hanh had, like, came to Ireland. The whole thing about the Buddhist thing about the cloud. So, like, think when we see a cloud, we don't think, like, when was that cloud born or when will that cloud die?
Yeah.
The cloud just becomes a cloud out of the other elements and then turns into something else.
Yeah.
And so I tried to think of it that way, of, like, you know, that no end, no beginning.
Yeah.
Which offered me some kind of, not explanation, but some other way of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of it, really, I just refuse to think that he's gone. Like, gone, and that there's nothing. Like, I just couldn't. And, you know, I know people have been like, how can you not believe in God, but you essentially believe in ghosts? You know, and I'm like, I don't have to rationalize it to you.
No, you don't.
I fucking don't.
Like, I mean,
I just want to believe that when I want to talk to my, have an imaginary conversation with my father,
yeah,
I can do that and imagine that he's around. And I don't care whether it falls in line with my atheism or what.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's how I can live. That's literally how I can live.
I would go to Glasnevin, there was a year between my brother Barry dying and us putting a headstone on. That's sort of tradition. Mm-hmm. You let the earth settle and all that. I don't know if it's sort of to give the family just time to adjust. Like, the whole thing is a process. I mean, I do also remember really, really being annoyed that mourning dress, mourning attire wasn't a thing anymore. I was like, I just want to wear black so people know that they should not come and ask me stupid questions like, what's the crack? What's the crack? What's the fucking crack? I'll tell you the crack. And I mean, it's so bad. And so for this year, in between, my mother and I went to basically anywhere we went, we would just be walking around graveyards, talking about Barry, talking about death generally, but also looking at headstones. And we were just so just, can you imagine putting that over someone you love? Oh, it's awful. So garish. Ugh. And we spent ages trying to pick a headstone. And my mother was like, well, what do you want? And I was like, well, Mommy, do you know, no pressure, but this is probably going to be your headstone too. So maybe you should make sure that you like it. We have a very gallows humor, I think it's called. Yeah. Just very.
We did the same thing because, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in my life. And my dad was a single man when he died. You know, obviously he had been married to my mother, but they divorced. And so we bought the grave, and I thought, well, this will probably be mine too. And my siblings, you know, they all have their own families. And yeah. So they're kind of like, yeah, you do whatever you want with that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I designed the...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, I had a very specific motif that I wanted, and, of course, you know, like, I have stupidly expensive taste, so I had to get, like, the fucking marbles, like, shipped from Europe.
So my mother and I probably would have thought it was real garish. Now my joke.
You know those memorial cards?
Yeah.
You think it's so important to get those.
Yeah.
And you realize, no one fucking wants that shit. Here's a card with the prayer on it, with a picture of Jesus, yeah, for my dead whatever. And everyone's like, thanks. And then you realize, they're just like, what do I do with this now? I can't throw it away. No one wants to throw it away.
No, nobody's going to throw it away.
But nobody's going to throw it away. Is that a bookmark the rest of your life? Like,
but, We obviously did that too, but we didn't have a picture of Jesus or a prayer on it.
What is on it?
My godmother took a really beautiful picture of a sunset. And then this lady I know, who's American but based in the UK, basically when she heard my brother passed away, sent me this poem that had been written by, I really hope I get this right, like a Jewish lady. I think it was like reflecting back on World War II, and it was just very nice. I can't remember it off by heart, but it's basically like about, you know, just because, you know, like, we see stars even though they're extinguished, and, you know, lights burn brighter when the night is dark. And it was just felt very touching to me, and I liked the fact that it was a poem and not a prayer.
Mm.
And then it was just a nice picture of him. My brother's grave, like, it's soil. It's like a flower bed. So, you know, every season we put in new flowers. And it, you know, it's one of the few things that are left that we can do for him. Or it feels like
we're doing.
Yeah, I go up. Also, we got, well, in Ireland anyway, graves tend to have like a frame around them, like maybe, I don't know, 2 inches, 3 inches in diameter.
Mm.
And we decided at the bottom we just wanted like a flat stone so it could be a seat for us to sit down on rather than, because it's sort of raised maybe a foot and a half off the ground, like, just because of the way that the graveyard is laid out sort of in steps almost. And so we go and sit up there, and it's a really beautiful view. There's Slieve Schnacht. It's like this mountain that you can see. Well, I suppose it's a hill, but it's the biggest one in the peninsula. And it's, you know, you can see that, and you can see, you know, the local town hall down in front of you, and just all these like rolling hills. And when it's a nice day, it's beautiful, even though you're sort of sitting at your brother's grave. I'm really babbling now, but I had all these like really weird daydreams about him during say the wake, during the funeral. Like, you know, this priest came, a different priest to the one that I had been like, leave now, and he was just doing like a decade of the rosary or whatever. But every now and again there'd be a weird turn of phrase, like, you know, I can't remember now, but basically, you know, Jesus died, he's risen, he's, you know. And I just kept imagining my brother like just setting up, and or been like, whoa, making this big, and everyone just like screaming and going like ape shit, like, what the fuck? And he'd be like, ah, ha, 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 ha. Or like, you know, my mother and I and other women in our family carried the coffin for a bit. And I just kept imagining him like throwing banana peels at us, and us like dropping the coffin and his body falling out on the ground, and everyone being like, oh my god, this is awful. And, like, none of these things happened, obviously. And it's not that I wanted them to happen, but it was like I was trying to distract myself, or like I was, I don't know, trying, like, having the crack with him about this disgusting thing that was happening. But yeah, so like that's one of the few times I still imagine Barry as like a corporal, physical person, is when I'm sitting up in the grave with him sort of by myself. I imagine him just like getting up and sitting on the bench. It's a weird one.
How do you think that it's affected your experience of joy? Because I feel like I experience life much more intensely now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I'm having a good time, I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
Or just whatever it is, there is, like, an added element of, I don't want to say urgency, but it's, like, gratitude or whatever it is. Like, even if I'm at a party and I'm wasted and I look around, you know, if I'm dancing or whatever, and I just have this feeling of, like, holy crap, I'm alive, and that's crazy. You know, like, and then, but I just have this feeling of, you know, like almost unreality, or but that I never had before.
Mm-hmm.
There's like one moment I can think of that I ever had that feeling before I experienced grief, of just like a sort of raw gratitude for being alive. At the same time, I will admit that there are also times where I'm like, Jesus Christ, this life is so long. You know, like, especially right when my dad died, I was like, Christ almighty, like, I'm in my 30s. I gotta live, like, another 40 years feeling like this. Like, mm-hmm. Life is eternal. You know? Where I'm like,
yeah.
This feels a lot longer now, you know?
I think I can identify with that a bit more. Like, maybe I'm just not there yet. I don't know. But, and it's not like that I'm sad all the time or anything like it. But it's like there's this ceiling or something, you know, and it's not really the same. I think a lot of it is like, I don't know, I had like a number of like very sad realizations after he died. You know, like, my mother is like one of 9 kids, and I love my aunts and uncles. Some of them are really close in age to me. You know, I realized I would never be an aunt, and that was like really like, oh man. And you know, like, a lot of the time when I say that to people, they're like, oh, do you know, like, you might be, you know, maybe your partner will have nieces or nephews, or
sure,
your good friends will have kids. And I mean, all of that is true, but also that's not what I envisioned as a young woman, imagining having, you know, nieces or nephews. And I have like some very young cousins, because my mother's the middle child in her house, and I taught one of them how to play the intro to a Nirvana song on his guitar the last time I was at home, and it was just the
most important stuff.
Beautiful thing in the whole world. And he's like, yeah, no, I know, it's great. And I'm like, play it again, play it again, play it. That's brilliant, that's brilliant. And his dad is so like, not gonna love it. It's great. But I mean, I don't know, I just, I like, and it is a beautiful relationship, and there are places that I can definitely find those things, and I'm probably been a bit like, wah. But I still, you know, I maybe Barry never would have had kids, or, you know, maybe he wouldn't have been able to have kids, or maybe he already has kids. I don't know. But anyway, I don't know, for me, there's like, I think there's this like new anxiety around losing people. You know, if someone that you thought was going to be with you forever and beyond your own death still there is gone, then nothing is secure. The whole world is made up of sand, and it's like not great.
I do feel bad because my spouse, you know, whenever he would be given out or would be depressed or just whatever it was, and because he had never lost anybody, I would say things like, everything you think is a problem is not a problem. You think things are bad, you got whatever, you have no idea what a real problem is.
And this is sort of when you had experienced grief and he hadn't.
Yeah. Well, now he has, and I feel so horrible that I said those things.
Yeah.
Because I should have just let him live in blissful ignorance, because now he knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I mean, even, like, I don't know that it's something that you can really communicate. I mean, I'd say he was still in relative blissful ignorance until he wasn't.
Yeah. I find it has changed the way I view other people and what I view as, like, problems and real problems.
I can really identify with that. I think I took it too far. So say, for example, for context, he died in the middle of July. We didn't realise that he was missing. He was already dead. He was never missing, but, you know, we didn't know. It was really protracted. There was 2 weeks. And then I fell out with, you know, my dad. We haven't really spoken since. I broke up with my partner. Within about a month and a half of it. And so I thought, like, you know, a couple of months later, like, I'll go on dates just to try and fill one of those kind of voids of connection or whatever. And so I went on a couple of dates with a really nice person, and they were really, really nice. But anything that they complained to me about, I was like, oh my God, you have no idea. And I think it's really a natural thing for two people who are seeing each other on the semi-regular to be like, oh, I had this shit day today, and, you know, oh, you know, I'm feeling bad about that. And I think I tried to describe it. I was like, I feel like I am a cookie jar, and empathy is cookies, and my cookie jar is empty. And there are some crumbs in the bottom that I need for the really, really important people in my life. Actually, just my mother. And there are no cookies for anybody else. You need to go and find your own fucking cookies, or bake your own cookies, or ask other people for cookies, because there's no empathy here at all. There's nothing left. I have nothing to give. Stop crying to me. Stop it. And I was just like, that's shit. You know? Yeah.
For me, I'd be like, so by the end of the story, is everyone still alive? Everyone's still alive? Fuck off!
Shut the fuck up!
When my dad was sick, and we knew it was terminal, but he hadn't died yet, and, you know, I was like G-chatting with my partner, and, you know, I was kind of trying to convey just how bad a day it was. It was a really bad day, and he was like, yeah, well, I've had a bad day too. And it was just kind of like, ooh! I don't know. I don't think I have the capacity for this conversation. And basically what had happened to him was he lost our cat. Our cat run out of the house and run away, which is really bad.
Yeah.
But in my world, all things being relative, I was like, oh, you lost our cat. Okay, well, I'm sure you'll try to find it.
In one way, a good thing is that, like, I suppose there's a little bit of perspective where things that might have seemed like, you know, oh my God, this is the worst thing in the world. You're like, this is grand, not a bother.
Yeah.
There was, this, I'm sure this has happened to everyone who's lost someone, and it's really normal, and it's just the community trying to, like, let you know that they're thinking about you. But it's just like when people approach you and ask, how's it going? How are you doing now? How's your mother?
Yeah.
I'm like,
but is that, see, this is the thing, is that better or worse than when people just pretend like nothing's happened?
So I don't think I've really experienced that. Like most people would have come up and done that at least once, and then after that pretended like, well, what's up with you? And especially because I remember actually you coming over to my house shortly after I first came back from Donegal, saying, you know, this incident happened to me recently whereby I was feeling down about my father, and I said that to a person, and they were essentially, oh, I thought that was quite a while ago. I thought you would be okay by now. And, you know, I remember you telling me this and me being like, and you didn't physically accost them or yell at them or make them cry, because that would be my go-to.
I think it took me 2 years to not cry every day. At least 2 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember, like, you saying to me, like, you know, if a year from now, if 2 years from now, whatever, if you, you know, feel the need to talk to someone, and, you know, like, I get it. And I also remember, like, it was really, really stupid. There was this girl, she's my age, whose brother passed away. Actually, there's a few people I know who've lost siblings. And at my brother's funeral, I remember asking them, I was like, does it get any better? And they were like, no. And every now and again, someone will ask me, like, oh, you know, how are you getting on? I'm like, well, he's still dead. So, you know, it's much the same. I mean, certainly there are entire days now where I don't think about him and be very sad. Or, you know, like, but then I think it's always really strange for people who come into my room. I think I probably have, like, half a dozen photos of us. I remember doing this, like, really, like, I bought a frame, and I just remember crying over this frame because I was like, now I get to put pictures of him in a frame, and that's how we interact. Well, I got you a new frame. Oh, I find this photo that I had, you know, and anyway, it's grand. Other people who'd lost siblings just talking to me in a very blunt way about it. No, it's still shit. It's very shit. Like, a friend of mine lost her sister, and she was like, I still go to the shop now and again and buy sweets for the five of us. And then I remember that it's the four of us, and that's sad, because I forgot for a wee minute, you know?
Mm. But I do think that there is a sort of, not secrecy, but it's, there's just a fear of looking like you're morose or sick or twisted or something, you know, even to just make a joke or tell a story or to just make it obvious that this is something that's still on your mind and that you're still living with. It's almost like a taboo that I feel like there is an expectation still that you're supposed to just, there's a certain amount of time that's supposed to go by, and then you're just supposed to fall in line and act like.
But I mean, it's not like I remember, because I was never around during a period where, you know, people wore black armbands, or, you know, the signifier to sort of demonstrate to the broader community that, you know, here is a person who's mourning the death of someone very important to them. And so, you know, don't ask them to dance, or don't. Just be polite and gentle, and then leave them alone. And you know, I'm not saying that, like, we should bring that back, and that people should be obliged to. Maybe the person who's died isn't really someone that you're sad has died, and so you don't want to be isolated from the community or whatever. I'm obviously talking in very broad spectrums here, but yeah, I mean, it would be great if you could just pull on a veil. And know that nobody was going to. I felt so bad. There was this. There was myself and my mother joked about. Then one more person asks me how you are, I'm going to tell him the truth. I'm going to say, do you know, she can barely get out of bed some days, and we just, like, sometimes put on music that we know is going to make us really melancholy, or we watch sad films, or we just, like, have too many wines and, you know, cry around our kitchen. Sometimes we leave the house, a lot of the time we don't. Sometimes we leave the house so people won't come to the house, or, you know, like, but it was all joking, like, we're not actually gonna say someone who's trying to condole with you. But there was this one time we were in the supermarket and this lady came over and was like, well, how are you, how's it going? And Mum just was like, oh, it's just a fucking carnival in our house, so it is, it's all fun and games. And straight away was like, oh God, I'm sorry. And the woman was like, no, it's fine, it's fine. And we went over an aisle and the woman was just sobbing in the fucking aisle, like, we'd made her, because like, she was a nice person who was not trying to be an asshole, like, and we just found this woman sobbing in the aisle and she's like, I can't believe I fucking asked you, I can't believe I asked you, how are you? Oh God, I'm so stupid. And Mom was like, no, I'm an asshole. And the pair of them were crying in the fucking supermarket.
Did you feel like, so you're 2 years in?
Three now, three. Yeah.
Three. Is it three?
Yeah, three there in fuck. July, yeah.
Yeah. It was only the 2 year anniversary. Why did I think that? You're 3 years in and I still feel like that's still like the thick of it.
I mean, I suppose I don't really know because I've nothing to compare it to other than other people's experiences. But yeah, like, it was, my uncle died in 2009, it's 2016 now, like, it's still sad. I know that his whole family are still sad. I know that, you know, day to day it's sad, but then on, like, you know, sometimes one of the nastiest things is how big happy family occasions make you sad. I mean, other sad things are sad, but the happy days are sometimes especially sad because you don't get to share them with them, you know. And then my brother is like a fucking asshole anyway, like, so my birthday's July 13th and his is July 18th. So I mean, that shit anyway, because I already had to like share my birthday with him. Like, my 21st was also his 18th. What a dickhead. Like, and I know technically it's our parents' fault, but I feel like he could have just held on another week or two. So I'm the 13th, he's the 18th, but then he died on the 15th. So it's this big, like, birthiversary week. And, like, to be fair, when I go home, my family, like, and that is a weird thing that's happened since my brother died, is that I've become much, much closer to all of my mother's siblings and her mother. I'm not exactly sure how that happened, but I'm really glad it did. I think it's just that they're like, oh, look, she's on her own now. But also because Mum's great and they all really like her. And, you know, I'm the first grandchild, so I think they all have a real soft spot for me anyway.
In the process, especially in the early days, did you find yourself doing... I did a lot of crazy things. Like, do you remember doing anything that just was... Aside from, like, just getting loaded, which I did drunk for 2 years straight. I think I was drunk for, like, 2 years. Just strange things.
Yeah, I go to find like statues of the Virgin Mary in random places. I mean, I suppose I was always kind of a little bit interested in it, but now it's like, I'm not really sure. I came up with all these ideas for these great big creative things that I would do to like honor or you know, and I'm obviously not like... So, for example, and I hope that nobody who sent one and might be offended is listening, but I took all of Barry's mass cards. So, for context, mass cards are cards that the priest signs that are essentially...
You pay money for them.
Yeah, man, like maybe up to a tenner. Like, but essentially, the priest will say mass in the name of this person. Or, like, you get more elaborate ones where people go on pilgrimages and bring you back one, like they've offered up their pilgrimage for this person, and it's all really nice. And so I took all of his mass cards and I cut them up. I cut all the actual like pictures of Jesus or pictures of Mary out of them and transcribed all the messages that were in them onto, you know, this now one-sided card. And so most of them were like, God bless, or or IP or whatever, but every now and again, like, one of our friends would write something that was so fucking touching that I would have missed if I wasn't cutting them up like some mads, or you were always wild good to us, and, you know, we'll never forget you, and, you know, and things like that. And so my plan was to take, and I mean, I still have them, they haven't gone anywhere. My plan was to take all of these pictures and make a giant collage of Barry, you know, those little, those pictures made up of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized in order to do it, I would need a fucking gavel of a house to do it, like, cause it would be that big, like, because the pictures are so big. I could probably cut them up smaller, but it just, at the time, it felt so important. So yeah, coming up with ways that I wanted to be buried, or like, you've obviously done the same.
I haven't, and I don't know what to do now, because I'm here, and I'll probably be here till I die, but you know, I lived 35 years elsewhere, and I think they're just gonna have to cremate me and put half of me over there and half of me here, because like, I can't imagine, and it's so self-important at the same time, because it's like, what the fuck do you care? You're gonna be dead. Like,
man, you know? I do care though.
I do too. I don't even have kids, and I care. You know, like, I don't know who the hell's gonna be giving a shit about where I'm buried. You know, to be honest. But I feel like when that randomer walks by my grave and is like, "Who the hell's that lady?" I just want somebody here and somebody there. Like, I feel torn between two places, and I feel like. I've got to be over there, and I've got to be here, and the only solution is to cut me in half, basically. But I definitely have a plot over there. Like, at least I have a place to go over here. I don't know if there's room for me in Glasnevin, but...
Oh, there is.
No, that I mean, like, responded. Specifically, there is a plot. Because that's where Mark's parents have a plot, hopefully. Hopefully they can fit me in.
They'll be able to fit you in, man. Don't worry.
Yeah. Just a little shake and bake.
The town that I'm from is called Carndonagh, and it's sort of right in the middle of the Inishowen Peninsula. And then Muncrana is like, it's a bigger town, sort of more to the south a bit. And there's a mountain road between the two towns. There's a number of different roads that you can take to get there, and this one is known locally as the Over the Mountain Road. And it's beautiful, it's all bog, sheep. And about halfway, if even halfway, there are two lakes called the Minchalochs. And yeah, I want to be put into a little boat and set on fire, like some sort of modern day Viking. I don't know if it's legal, I'm pretty sure it's not, but that won't be my problem. That will be other people's problems. But I just don't know who cares enough to break the law and put me in a boat and set me on fire.
Well, I was going to say you'll find out, but you won't find out.
I won't, I'll be, yeah.
I know we're both atheist and technically don't believe in an afterlife, but do you feel like having Barry die before you, does that make the idea of death for yourself any easier at all?
Maybe. Although I do panic a lot about my mother dying now and then being like really properly alone.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like that there's another death that could be as significant.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, who's, you know, like, touch wood, man, you know, like, maybe I'll get married and they'll pass away, maybe I'll have a child and they'll pass away, maybe, you know what I mean, like, there's lots of, you know, life finds new and interesting ways to make you wish that you weren't a part of it.
Yeah. But is there a part of you, I guess is what I'm saying, like, for me, I think I know on my deathbed, if I'm lucky enough to have a deathbed and not just, like, you know, get run over by a bus or something, I will be thinking that there's a possibility I might see my dad again, mm-hmm. and that will make things easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
My dad and whoever the fuck else dies before me. Hopefully everybody. But like...
Yeah, I'm like the opposite. I'm like, no, no, man. I don't want any of that.
I don't know what's worse. You know, this idea that I'll be... You know, the idea of being reunited, I guess, is quite compelling to me, or at least comforting or something.
Yeah.
I feel like, or will be comforting if it isn't right now. Even though it's kind of at odds for my belief system, which is that when you die, there's nothing.
Yeah.
But Do you have that kind of magical thinking at all?
I don't know. I mean, like, I suppose, like, you know, like again, like I said about, like, the whole parallel universe, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I mean, I suppose that, like, you know, before death, maybe your brain does these weird things whereby you believe that you're, you know, with the people that you love. And, I mean, how you can't tell the difference between reality and not reality. Who knows what death is like when you're experiencing it? Because, you know, we can't. We can't go back and share, unfortunately. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know, like, this is awful bad form, and, like, I appreciate that I have no idea. But there was a stage after Barry's death where I was like, wouldn't it be great if I could just go mad and think that he was talking to me, or that I could really believe that, you know, he was here, or that I was seeing him, which is obviously just, you know, grief doing horrible things to you. And
but on that, let's talk about dreams.
I've only had maybe like 2 dreams.
Are you kidding me? In 2 years or 3 years?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it's just that I like sleep through the night and don't remember my dreams when I wake up, but I can only remember.
Amazed.
No, I don't have. There's one where we were both in a pub in our hometown, the Sportsman's. We were literally just sitting down, and he's like, give me a second, I'll be back. And he never came back. And that was it. That was the whole length of my dream, is people coming up to me and be like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, Barry's coming now, and we're going to...
No, this Barry's really coming. Take Freud Barry's to
figure
that out.
Barry's coming.
Okay.
Oh, what about you?
Oh, constantly. Like, they started before he was even dead, like, you know. But when my dad was taking, you know, his last breaths or whatever, I was like, come visit me, please visit me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and so I do have a lot of dreams where they're just so real, and I know their dreams.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he knows their dreams, so I act like this is just a normal whatever. But they're, you know, I can smell them, I can feel them, like, you know, those ones are really hard actually, because, you know, you just wake up sobbing.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I'm so thankful for them.
Yeah.
Because it's the closest I'll ever get to having the real thing. And so it's strange. And then other times, you know, he'll just appear in some wackadoo way, and I'm kind of like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
You know, and but it's almost always this acknowledgement of, like, that he's making the appearance as someone who's visiting me, and not just like, oh, my dad was in that dream. It's like, he was in that dream, and in the dream, we both knew he was visiting.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's, you know, I know that it's all, like, synapses in my brain. It's not really any kind of supernatural thing that's happening, but at the same time...
Or is it? Do you know?
Who knows? But
the atheists can't acknowledge that they could at least be wrong. What hope is there for the logical world?
I had a period of time where I was completely obsessed with the Long Island Medium. Do you know this lady?
No.
This is TV program.
I'm laughing already. Sorry.
The Long Island Medium. She's just like, yo, I talk to dead people. It's a thing. You know, like, she's like,
he says you're a smuck.
Like, it's totally been debunked, whatever, but the program falls, like, she's like, I went to Joey's Bakery, you know, and I was at the counter waiting for my bagels, and I was like, hey, did your father die? You know, and it's just like, and the lady's like, oh, yeah. She's like, he says, what's the number 27? 26, you know, like, it's
oh my, like, God, that's the age I was 3 years before I was 30.
Yeah. It's totally ridiculous. But I got so into it because it's very convincing. Like, the whole thing, the people come to her house and she has these sessions and she says shit that whatever. And I honestly think that what it is, like, it's obviously faked, but she's the faked part. And the people that go to see her, that's real. And their responses are real.
Yeah.
And their experiences are real. And that, I think, is what I connected with.
Yeah.
So, like... And just this fantasy that there is somebody who can reach your loved one that you can't reach. And I just, like, for honestly, like, at some stage, I'd say that for about, like, 6 months, I was just, like, I was, like, torrenting episodes of the fucking Long Island Medium because I just was so into this idea. And I know in Ireland...
Long Island. I'm gonna find her.
But in Ireland, like, mediums are a thing. And yeah, I remember, man. Like, I was
in the
interning.
Country, like, there are, like rurally, there are people who are known as mediums, and you get a group of 10 or more people in your house, everyone chips in 10 or 20 quid.
Yeah.
And you know, go it's in one event. At a time. Like, I did go to a medium once. I was very young though, and it was because I was working in a kitchen with a bunch of women who'd organized one, and I went, and my grandfather had very recently died. Like, and you know, I can't remember, you know, these things when they happen that long ago where you're like, I don't know if this is memory or fucking a memory that I made up for myself, but basically he was like, your grandfather passed away recently, and I'm like, yeah he did, and he was like, he was very sick, and I'm like, yeah he was, and he was like, you were praying for him to die, and I'm like, no, and he was like, well, that's all right, he says that he wanted to go, and that there's this thing with granddad. Well, I don't know if it's true or not, it's a story mum tells me, that you know, the closer he got to death, the stranger's memory became, and he would remember some things really vitally and think that, so he apparently he was talking about taking me fishing, which isn't something that he had done since I was like very very young, you know, but I think mum, like, I believe mum when she said, but you know, I think it was like quite touching for her that, you know, he was talking about me, or you know, and it was very nice for me to think that he was thinking of me, and you know, it was all very comforting, and but he had been sick for so long that I remember going to see him the night he died, and he was just I was just in pain, you know, like, and you were just like, oh, I think, like, I would still pray now and again, but it would usually be like, dear God, if you're actually there, why don't you prove it by doing this thing that I want, and then I will go to mass every day for a week.
Although I did go to a psychic once, who I honestly do believe was a psychic. Like, yeah, that was, like, legit.
Legit psychic. Sorry. Such an asshole.
No,
they might be.
I don't think they are.
There's also part of me that when it comes to Barry, like, this, you know, even if psychics could communicate with the dead, Barry'd be like, lame, no way. Although he probably wouldn't say lame. Or that he'd just come back and be like, tell her that she's gonna, like, tell her I said she smells really bad. He wouldn't be using it to communicate anything about the future, that he'd just be winding me up.
Do you find yourself reading, like, emails and things like that? Or do you,
Barry wasn't really wildly, like, technologically literate. Like, I set up his Facebook account for him, and I don't think he ever logged into email or anything like that. I have found old school journals of his where, like, he used to... So he was, like, diagnosed with dyslexia and ADHD, but not until he was pretty much finished school. Like, so he was always sort of pegged as a bit of a problem child, but, like, never in a really bad way, just in a, like, disruptive in class. Getting in trouble for being the funniest bastard in all of Carn. But so it would be fun to read through his journals. Like, one of his English teachers is, like, scribbling on his hand. When I told him to stop, he responded by saying, it's my hand, I'm not doing any harm. You know, finding old, you know, textbooks or whatever that he'd written in, things like that. And I mean, to be honest, I still haven't gone through all this stuff years later. Do you know, there's still closets with, not a lot, like, I have been going through it, but it's like, it's almost like I'm saving it. Like, you know, there might be another really interesting thing in there, you know, that I haven't found yet. I do go back, like, I think, like, one of the last exchanges we had over Facebook was, so Barry sort of worked seasonally in Scotland when there was work available on building sites. But, you know, when the weather's bad, there's no work, like, so he could be at home for protracted periods. And at this stage, he was home, and being his big nagging sister, it was like, Barry, just sign on the dole. Just, if you're going to be here for 2 or 3 months, like, just sign on the dole. Like, and he'd be like, no, they won't give it to me. And I'm like, they will, like, 100%. And I think like the last message from him on Facebook is like, fuck off, Kathy. Which is just, yeah, the typical.
Did you ever feel like you needed to grieve really hard because the minute you stopped grieving was like he was more gone than before?
I don't know. Like,
if that makes any sense. But I have talked to other people who felt that it was like, that you need to kind of keep it going because it's immediate, it keeps it immediate. Like it just happened or he was just here.
Yeah.
And that as you start to get over it, it's like acknowledging that time has passed.
Yeah. No, I don't think like I felt that way, although I suppose I can see why you might. Like Barry's death and all was like very protracted over, like, well, I think. Although having talked to other people who, like, you know, an Irish funeral is a very short, someone dies and then there's a wake, or if you're from down the country, maybe there's not a wake. Mm. Which is, I was at my first funeral without a wake recently and was like, you couldn't even go in and look at the body or anything. Like, just really, like, and there's no sandwiches. But just for me, it's become a real part of death is sort of, you know, like, you know, going in and seeing the corpse. And, you know, I remember for like my uncle and my grandfather, the act of touching them when they were dead, their hands felt like some foreign material, you know, like cold something that wasn't a person's hand, or do you know what I mean? Like, it was very, they were very dead. But, you know, for my brother, it was a closed coffin, so we didn't see him. And a friend of mine died this year, and I didn't get to see him. And, I mean, there's definitely good things to that. You know, you only remember them when they were alive because you haven't seen them since. You know, mm-hmm. As I mentioned, you know, divorced parents and a dead child is a very complicated negotiation. And I felt that it was me doing a lot of the negotiating between them and between the families and all that. Yeah, so I felt like I wasn't really focusing on me and what I was feeling like. And I spent a lot of time at home and traveling to and from home. And then I remember when I came back to Dublin afterwards, I got really heavily involved with organizing an event that was happening about a month and a half later, one of the March for Choices. And so that just like eked up all of my free time. So I was purposely not thinking about it. And even now I was talking about, you know, going home for his anniversary there in July, and I spent most of the time scheduling things to do with people, so much so that, like, actually for all I give out about mass, going to mass might have been the only specific Barry related thing that I did. Like, other than, you know, like I would, you know, stop off at the grave and get up and pick out weeds, not that there's very many, like, or, you know, just, you know, but like most of the time it was like spending more time not thinking about the reason why you're there. I'm strange like that. Like, I think to sometimes when I think about it, it's like really overwhelming. It's got so bad that sometimes I have to put on these songs like that just really remind me of Barry, or that really remind me of him. And then I'll just sit and listen. I don't have like a dead Barry playlist, but I might as well have, you know, like, or, you know, sometimes I watch films that we watched when we were kids, like The Black Cauldron. It's this like old Disney film that had like a boy as a lead character, which was kind of unusual in our house because I was always watching, you know, girl ones. Or there was a really bad version of Aladdin that, what's his name? He was in The Karate Kid, Pat, I can't pronounce his surname, like, I want to say Marita, but it's not. Yeah. I've completely, but anyway, there's a really bad animated version of some children's tales that he narrated, and I went and found it on the internet so I could watch it. Yeah, just things like that, like All Dogs Go to Heaven. Oh my god, I watched it and just wept. The Secret of Nim. Just these things that like he and I did together, so I just do them alone and feel very alone.
There's something very, like, in a way, pleasurable about that kind of.
Well, personally, I feel like I still spend so much time avoiding experience in it, like, which my therapist says isn't good. But that I go out of my way to avoid it, like, that I will feel sad and then be like, oh, do you know, just like whatever. So it's still quite hard for me to, you know, I think also because he'd been a seasonal worker outside of the country, that I might only have seen him, you know, since he turned 18, 19, might only see him 3 times a year, maybe 4. So there's something in that, you know, that, you know, we weren't as massive a part of each other's lives as we had been. Or there's like one of the last times I visited him, he was living in Liverpool. I went over, we got very drunk together, and he was so sweet, talked me into bed and like put on a film and sat at the end of the bed. And then when I was leaving, he'd bought, like, he and I used to play, because, you know, we're very similar in age and stuff, we used to play computer games together, so that was kind of our Christmas present. Mum would get us like a new game, and we'd have to take it like turnabout, like life about. And we got really big into like Metal Gear Solid. And so he bought me, like, you know, there was like 1 to 4 of these. And I put it in the shelf, and I didn't go to play it until he died. The fucking disc wasn't in it. Yeah, obviously the disc had been with his other things, and he'd just given me a cover and been like, here you go. And I was like, oh. I've gone and got it again since, like, but things like that, like, things that he and I would have done together. I do.
It's comforting. Or oddly, is it antagonistic to the grief?
Well, I think
both.
Yeah. I think maybe, I don't know, I just don't really know how to process it. Like, you know, when I start, like, feeling sad is not something that I, or anyone I presume, enjoys, and so you develop these coping mechanisms for distracting yourself from it or whatever, which obviously aren't very healthy or whatever. Do you know what I'll do? I'll get really, really drunk and sing at this tree about, I mean, I'm not saying that's actually something I've done, but I might have and just don't remember. I feel like doing things like this, like listening to, you know, songs or watching old movies or playing old computer games, is at least like a proactive kind of way of engaging with what I'm feeling. As opposed to being like, right, well, it's time to go out and do something and pretend like this thing hasn't happened.
And also, it's not destructive.
No, no.
You know, there's lots of ways people try to cope with grief that are pretty unhealthy. And
I've definitely tried most of those. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I think I was literally, like, you could consider me an alcoholic for, like, a year.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, nobody knew, well, you know, Mark would know, but I was just, I'd be like, oh, is it fucking 5 yet?
Yeah.
So it's accept, like, she's always saying, like, when is the acceptable time for, like, for me to have a drink, like, every day?
Yeah. 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky in that I live in Dublin. I was able to, like, type free counselling Dublin into the internet, be picky enough to ignore all the religious ones and still find someone who was willing to see me within about a week or two. And I've been going on and off for 3 years ever since, and it's a sliding scale. So, I, you know, when I have the money to pay more, I pay more, and when I don't, I don't. And they've never made me feel like I need to leave or make space for other people or...
There you have it, my conversation with Kathy about death and grief and the weird things that happen along the way. And I don't know, let me know if you identified with any of the things we talked about or if you found that interesting at all. I do intend to do these kinds of conversations about once a month or so. I know I enjoy doing the music as well, but it's nice to switch things up. So, splainin', we'll have some splainin', but the music will obviously continue in the weeks to come. So, Thanks for listening. Feel free to leave feedback. Let me know any other topics that you would like me to discuss with a randomer. And have a great weekend. I'll see you next week on Splainin', radioactiveinternational.org.